Are we going to talk about how many Diddy songs can we play in our sets now?
Is the intro to today's podcast.
And the correct answer is 12.
12.
Exactly. You know what? It probably is. Knowing Cable, yeah, he's probably worked out all the appropriate songs now that can make it in. It probably is 12.
But, yeah, because here's the thing. It's like My Money, My Problems, you can go straight to Biggie's verse, or you can just play Mason and go straight to Biggie.
I do that anyway.
All About the Benjamins, someone's done the AI version where it's Jadakiss doing Puff's verse, because Jadakiss obviously ghost wrote that for Puffy back in the day. Or you can just go straight to the Lox's verse on that. 112, Only You Remix, again, you can go straight to like Biggie's verse on that. So yeah, there's cheat codes, man. I mean, you know, provided you're okay with like a few ad-libs here and there, him going, take that, then you're good. Obviously, no one's going to be playing like Bad Boy for Life anymore, unfortunately. Sick beat though, but yeah.
Or Diddy.
Diddy, I was just about to say
That's like top tier Neptune beat as well, man. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. I might play it this week and see what happens.
I'll be honest, that was actually, back in the day, that was actually one of my favourite songs to play from like the Bad Boy era.
The video is so
I don't know why. Well. I love the beat. It's just easy, wasn't it? It's just an easy tune. I quite liked it. But yeah, you know what? I haven't finished watching the documentary yet, so I think maybe let's not cover it all today. Yeah. That can be our entry into next year. Straight from the top, we can figure out what we're playing. I tell you though, it did just remind me. I played an R&B thing on Saturday, and I played Robin Thicke. I was doing the warm-up. I was just doing the first 2 hours. And the promoter's brief was very specific. He was like, stay away from all the big, big, big songs. He was like, I want it slow and obscure. So I was like, that's cool. That's a pretty cool Perfect. Warm-up for me. Like, Beautiful. I can just dig and get all the weird shit out that I listen to and no one else knows. But obviously, you have to do the crowd entertainer thing. And I brought out Robin Thicke, Lost Without You.
Beautiful.
Bang
big tune.
Beautiful.
Big tune.
A massive group of girls in the middle of the dance floor. They were all together. There was probably about 15 or 20 of them. There was one main one waving at me. Cut the song. And all of them were in the background doing this.
Oh, mate.
Their thumb down. And I'm like,
here's
this
a question.
This is a banger. So immediately.
You should be able to throw something at people when they do that.
You know, one thing you could do. You know, dog owners have like electric collars
yeah.
for naughty dogs.
You could just
have that. Everyone in the club has to wear a collar.
Oh my god!
And you could just point the remote at them.
Were they dancing to Chris Brown later in the night?
They were singing their hearts out to Chris Brown. Everything else, But it actually made me Google. My actual Google question was: What did Robin Thicke do? Because I'm like, their reaction to this song was not a "I don't like this song." It was a
"How can you
play this?" And there's like accusations on there, but I don't think there was any charges. But then the main thing it came up with was Blurred Lines had a Marvin Gaye lawsuit. But then on the video shoot, like he was accused of doing something inappropriate. But then it was like no conviction. It was just accusations, which like. I'm like, mate,
what Cable just said there is just proof,
what did he
mate.
Say?
What they do with Chris Brown? They dance with Chris Brown. If they like you enough, they will sweep your accusations under a rug.
And it's an era where it's like selective outrage. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, like, you shouldn't be like doing any kind of predatory sort of behavior or anything like that. But at the same time, if you're gonna have that amount of vim for Robin Thicke, then keep that same energy for your Chris Browns or your Diddy's or there's like R. Kelly, like all these other
even
Trey, for, like, fuckery.
Trey Songz.
Mm.
Like there's
go by that.
There's, I mean I reckon we could probably, if we're talking accusations, and obviously like have to put it out there, we're not defending any kind of behaviour, but if we're just talking accusations that didn't get charged or anything like that, I think we're probably wiping out half the music industry.
We'll just be playing this Sorar Control Time for an hour.
Yeah.
use stems, instrumental only. But yeah, I mean, maybe actually, you know what? We can unpack all of that another time when we've all finished the Diddy documentary and we're going to discuss whether we're cancelling Diddy's music or not. We'll deep dive into that. It's been, I think 10 months almost to the
Is
day.
It really?
I'm going to check. February, yeah, I think, was the last time we recorded. My fault, because I think throughout, leading up to summer, we have like 3 or 4, maybe even 8 different sessions booked that, for various reasons, I had to cancel and pull out of. So, yeah, not ideal when you're running a weekly podcast. But we're here now.
10 monthly podcast now. Buzz it.
Yeah, an annual podcast. How has 2025 been for you guys in terms of DJ life? DJ
beautiful.
World?
Beautiful. I've started a pivot.
Oh, okay. Yeah, unpack that.
Which is a nice pivot. I'm trying to bring Cable on my journey as well. I'm flooding these WhatsApp with messages.
I'm intrigued. I'm also feeling a bit left out, but yeah, go on.
You won't be double. You won't be. You'll be on board very soon. You just don't Excellent. Know it yet. So at the moment, I've been doing a lot of work, like a lot of private stuff. It's over the summer especially. I had a few like destination weddings and bits and bobs. I'm in like the late restaurant stroke, early club type of setting now as well, quite regularly. Doing a lot of like 6 till 12 parties, which is just absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
Obviously still doing like clubs and stuff as well, but I'm slowly doing less and less, or trying to do less and less, and in the process of starting my own agency as well.
Okay.
Which is where we will be in contact very soon, Double. Don't worry about it.
Oh, sick. That's big business moves. Yeah, I love that.
Small pivot. But yeah, it's been good. It's been fun. Got to see some cool places, play at some cool places. So yeah, it's been a good year. It's nice.
Oh, that you just saying what you're working on has excited me, because in my experience now, I've never really used an agency. I've only used one agency, and they have actually, they're run by a DJ.
Mm.
It's Hear This, Martin and Andy's agency.
Yeah, it's good
top
agency.
Guys, run by DJs and like top tier work. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And just the process, the whole business process behind it is incredible, and it's a good agency to get work from. But every other agency I've ever heard of is when a DJ has a complaint and they're like, this agency's fucked me over. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, knowing that there's another one appearing run by a DJ, but also obviously knowing you as a good guy, I know it's going to be another ethical agency. So
and you know, that's the kind of angle. So it won't be just me running it. It'll be Walshy as well, DJ Walshy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite funny. I got married in the summer.
Congratulations.
And thank you very much.
Congrats.
And I was talking to my wife about, you know, I want to eventually, when I'm older, because I'm only 34, I do want to DJ less eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Still DJ, of course, but be a bit more selective with what I am doing now, and get to a point where I can still make money just sitting in my pants at home, you know.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think about starting an agency. She was like, yeah, do it. Like, why not? And then I got home, and like the week I got home, Walshy messaged me and was like, bro, I've been thinking about starting an agency. Do you want to do it with me? And I was like, fuck it, yeah, sweet. So we got together a few times, hashed out a few ideas, and was very aligned in that sense in terms of how we want things to work. Because
mm-hmm.
This year I've got quite a few gigs that I've just said, like, for example, Cable, like, Cable, do you fancy doing this gig? He's like, yeah, sweet, I'll do it, or other people and whatnot. And it's getting to a point where I'm getting quite a few that I can't do myself. So I was fuck it, I'll start an agency and see what happens. So I'm not saying I'm going to be like this big, like, global brand or anything, but it'll be a point where people can contact me. They can select a DJ on the website, or a musician or a singer or whatever on the website. And I can put them in contact. We'll take our fee, and then the DJ can take the rest. It's not going to be one where it's like, we'll take 50% and the DJ, you know, takes it. It's going to be quite, I would say, within DJ ethics, mm-hmm. per se, you know, because, you know, we know what it's like, you know, some agencies take the piss. We just want to basically put money in our pockets, but also put money in our mates' pockets at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the angle we wanted to go down. Started off relatively small, like corporate wedding bits and bobs, possibly get some residencies as well, and just see where we can take it, really. So, yeah, very early stages, Double. That's why you haven't had the call yet, but you definitely will, mate, for sure.
Yeah,
you definitely will.
No, I'm excited for you, man. That's proper cool.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you. So yeah, it's been an interesting year, put it that way.
Sick.
Put it that way.
Cable, what's been going on with you?
It's been good, man. Like, obviously, Craig has been my, well, up until starting the agency, he's been my unofficial wedding agent this year. So I've kind of pivoted a little bit more into weddings. And yeah, similar thing, like a lot of earlier finishes, still in the clubs. Got like a couple of like monthly club residencies, which are good. Still doing regular stuff for, you know, people like Colombo Group, who handle Jazz Cafe, Old Queen's Head, Phalanx as well. And yeah, also kind of pivoting musically as well, more into kind of house and electronic stuff. So having what best part of 20 years of kind of playing like hip hop and adjacent sounds to it, I just got to a point in my career and I was like, you know what, I could keep doing this, but the kind of room, like the ceiling is still like relatively low, especially in the UK for it. So I was like,
yeah.
I've been getting more and more into this since pandemic anyway, so let me just kind of take the plunge and just kind of rebrand slightly and kind of start putting up more content that aligns with that and actually make tunes that is kind of with, you know, aligns with what I want to kind of play in a house set, so to speak. So I kind of been making like a lot of tech house and Latin tech in my spare time, and just like going to click up with someone, actually try and start shopping into labels early next year. But yeah, the gigs are cool, man. Outside of that, with all the edits and cleaning stuff I'm doing under Lace, that's kind of evolved more into doing music direction for live shows. So still working with Martin on Eve stuff for our live shows and a tour. Did that, and recently you've been doing bits for Tiny Temper for his UK tour, and Jingle Bell Ball as well. So yeah, big up Charlesy for shouting me for that. And I think the plan is to kind of work long term with him and Martin and kind of grow that side of thing outside of DJing, because again, if you've got DJs acting as musical directors, we know best what works, what doesn't work with live shows. Yeah. And it's always good to kind of have that kind of club and live show perspective, not to kind of trash any kind of music directors, because there's still some amazing ones out there. They kind of know what they're doing, like with music theory and arrangement and stuff like that. But it's just like trying to see how we can kind of, you know, handle things like curating and playlisting for small spaces, all the way down to, right, cool, this artist has got a tour, or this artist is in development. All right, your live shows are good at the moment, but we can make it like 10 times better if we do XYZ with your live show, and you know, start looking at visuals and the kind of video side of things as well. So kind of, yeah, syncing audio to visual and that. So yeah, it's been cool. But yeah, I think all of us can probably agree that like clubbing's really sort of been, well, high street clubbing in general has really sort of been up and down. Probably more down than up. But yeah, it's you know, getting by, bro. It's all good.
That's it.
Shit. Yeah, you know what? It's funny, that musical direction stuff, like, you're right. As DJs, I think we do make the best musical directors. Because I have a similar thing where, see, with Pot of Papers tour, I wasn't like, it was on no capacity, was the musical director. It was a musical director. But a lot of it was left down to me in a sense of, like, what order does this work? And then I was able to say, well, look, this song actually shouldn't go here, that should go here, and this, that, and arrange things. Same with RD's whole live show. Is basically I format the whole running list, and I do that with RD's stuff because it's so energetic. I do it in a sense of like, what would work as a club set? Do you know what I mean? Like, what is this audience gonna go with, and how do we structure this whole entire set so that it flows properly? Do you know what I mean? So I really enjoy that side of the work, like the musical director side, putting together live shows, and I think it's sick. Like, so much fun. And then when you get to see the artist perform it live, and you know, like, that was my decision and it's gone
off.
Like, that's the, it's the best feeling. But yeah, it's sick, man. It's interesting because, yeah, I see so many of, like, our era of DJs, like the seasoned DJs, now we're getting to a point where it's like, you know what, clubs aren't what they used to be. They're still cool, but they're not where we want to be full time. So I see so many people moving towards like day parties or moving to other roles outside of DJing, but aligned with it. Do you know what I mean? Within the music industry and stuff. And I think a lot of people realize that when you get to maybe like 30 plus, time to start steering the exit plan from clubs.
That's it.
Yeah, and also like just like you said, like from like an age perspective, like you know, you're not in your 20s no more. Like, do you really want to be doing that like 3-4 a.m. drive home? Like, especially you know, you got your residency in Southampton. Like, I don't know what time that finishes, but it probably takes like an hour and a half to get home, right?
Yeah, it's two hours drive home,
bro. Do you want to be doing that like week in week out when you're like your 30s and 40s? Like,
nah, especially too much. I've got 2.5 children. I've got one coming in February. I can't remember if I told you actually. Yeah,
congratulations, bro.
One landing in February now. So,
congrats.
Like, yeah, with 2 kids already and another one coming. Like, I don't want to spend my weekend mornings in bed recovering from a club night before. Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, not long term. Anyway, I'm enjoying it at the moment, but no, long term, definitely not.
That's part of the reason why, this year, I started making a bit of an effort. Because I was doing those like cable no mantra, those 4 a.m. finishes, getting in at like 5:30 sometimes, you know, it's just ridiculous. Yeah, and getting up at 8 o'clock with the kids, I was burying myself. Whereas like if I was to do say a wedding, the latest really a wedding will finish is 1 o'clock if they get a late license. Typically it's like 11:30, 12:30, so that's a lot more manageable than, you know, those extra 4 hours are a major key.
Yeah, definitely. You know? So I did a wedding about a month ago. And I was booked for it in the summer, or probably, excuse me, early September they booked me for it. And it was for Pot of Paper, for his wedding. So ordinarily, I'd be like, no, I don't do weddings. But because it was Potter,
not a normal wedding, is it?
I know what the soundtrack's going to be like. I know what the people there are going to be after. And it's definitely something I can provide. But I thought, but also, I do know there's going to be people there that I'm not familiar with and might want different types of music. So I was hesitant at first, but then I was like, you know what? I think I need to get out of my comfort zone and take this booking just to see how it goes. And did it. And yeah, it was sick. It was like, it was so much fun to do.
That's it. And you can be selective with it as well. Like, don't write, I've started doing weddings now, but I wouldn't say I'm a wedding DJ by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just a DJ with gear. I'm a DJ with equipment.
Now the wedding party's going past
me. Yeah, it's slightly different. You know, so I'm still quite selective. I wouldn't just take any random booking. And I always like go in a bit of detail before I even accept like a deposit, because I'm not going to a wedding and playing ABBA and things like that, you know. I can't do it. I won't do it.
No,
so.
I agree. I think that's where my boundary. That's where my boundary as a DJ would be. It's like if it's in the scope of music that I enjoy playing, I'll come and do it.
Exactly. But don't get me wrong, I don't mind a few requests here and there. Like if they want, I don't know, whatever, just one or a couple of songs from specific artists. I'm not a dick, you know, I'll play it, it's not a big deal, but you know the ones where like, oh, we want like Cheese for a very long time. I'm like, listen, I'm not your guy, and you know, can find you someone else that possibly would be more capable of doing it. It's not that I'm not capable, it's just I don't have the music on my laptop.
no, that's the thing.
I just don't have it.
I think if you're not overly like too keen on it and you don't really kind of care about it, you're not really kind of deliver as good a service as someone who's like really like loves playing all that shit and getting on a mic and, you know, hosting and doing games and all that shit as well. So all that sort of stuff.
It's just not my bag, you know, and I won't enjoy it. They won't enjoy it. And I wouldn't just take money just for the sake of it. Like, don't know if it's a lot of money, then I'll, you know, everyone's got their price. but typically it's around the sort of ballpark that I can find a replacement for that gig anyway, so I'd rather just give it to someone that's more willing, capable, and would enjoy it more. So that's my whole outlook anyway.
I took another job that was a bit out of my comfort zone. And funnily enough, it was actually the exact week after Potter's wedding. It was for my friend Pedro. He's a DJ from Brighton, and his missus, it was her birthday party. Now, she is the director for an Apple TV series called Silo.
Oh, sick.
That's quite funny. A mate of mine's working on that.
Right,
as one of like the back cast. That's quite funny.
Crazy. Small world. So, Common, the rapper, is one of the lead actors. I've not seen Silo, but...
Yeah, I haven't watched it either.
He's one of the stars of the series. So anyway, Pedro basically messaged me one day and he was like, look, it's going to be my girlfriend's birthday. And he said, she wants to have a party and she wants you to DJ. So I was like, okay, a little bit skeptical because, again, private parties, small, intimate crowds, like, I don't know if they're going to vibe with the kind of music that I am, you know, that I play. I don't, I'm not playing ABBA and stuff like this. And he was like, no. He's like, she's seen you play in the clubs. I know her anyway. So, and so they know what I do. And then he goes, so I was like, yeah, okay, I'll do it. It's cool. And he was like, oh, okay, cool. It's going to be in London. I was like, right, okay. He goes, it's at Common's house. And I was like, what? He was like, yeah, Common is throwing the party for her. So, yeah, it's going to be at his house.
That's man.
So I was like, I'm so glad I said yes.
That's unreal.
Because now that's just even leveled the booking up even more. This is going to be sick. And he was like, he goes, you know, like, make sure you just come prepared. Bring a mic as well. Common might jump on and freestyle. So I was like, oh, I'm bringing the camera and everything. Videographer. But, no, I didn't bring all that. But yeah, no, that was just, it was a really cool booking to have. And his place in London is sick. It was in like a downstairs, like communal bar area. But like, this is like rich people communal bar area. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Everything's made of gold, bro, in it. Like, it was crazy. But no, it was proper good. And the party went off. We had so much fun. And even like for quite a lot of the night, Common was kind of just about. And I could see, like, I was mixing from hip hop to Afro beats to dancehall. And all the people that were there were just absolutely loving it. A few amapiano requests. And yeah, just going to it and chatting with Common afterwards, he was like, oh, it was sick to see how like all those genres worked together. Because I guess he's from an era of clubbing where it was like, you play hip hop in the club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So like for him to obviously see that. So it's quite cool getting the nod of approval from Common. The funny thing was about 11:30, the concierge for the building came down. And we got told we had to turn the music down because Ariana Grande had complained. I was come on, tell her to come down, man.
Tell her to come down and have some food.
Yeah. But
did he jump on the mic?
He did not jump on the mic. Oh, but you know what? I'd even built a little crate. I built some Common tunes. I put a load of Common tunes in there. I'd even even dug into like some instrumentals that I knew would be his tempo and his
pique his interest,
like, that he hasn't ever like gone on or anything like that, stuff like Full Clip and things that, do you know what I mean, like proper sick hip hop instrumentals. I had them already, but being honest with you, I didn't play any Common songs because I thought I don't want to force it, and it's like I felt it was a bit, I'm always very wary about playing artist songs when they're around. Because some Pot of Paper, for example, hates it. He doesn't like, excuse me, he doesn't really even like performing his songs that much. He doesn't like being in the room when they're being played. And I know, like, there's times where we've been in an after party, me and RD have been in an after party, and the DJ has forced, like, six RD songs in a row in a club set. Even RD's sat there like, oh, just want to hear some different music. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So I'm always very wary about playing an artist's songs if they're in the room, because it's like, well, if it doesn't fit the vibe, I'm not gonna play it just for them. Do you know what I mean? So, but I went into hip hop enough that he would know I knew what I was about.
Yeah.
So the opportunity was there, but I kind of didn't ever force it. I never was like, oh, I'll take the mic and do it. I just thought if he comes up and asks to bar, obviously I'm gonna be straight away.
It's surprising
ready.
Because every time I see a video of Common, like, he's never just not rapping.
Yeah,
like, he's always doing some cool freestyle, like in the back of a tour bus or.
Yeah, like, but I think that is, they are like situations set up for content though.
Yeah,
because even at this party, it was all like, because I haven't seen the show, I don't know if any of the other people there were actors or if they were just all crew. But like, there was, people weren't like snapping the fact that they were with Common because they've all worked on the show together. So for them, it's just. They all called him Rashid. Yeah. Like, his name's Rashid, so they weren't calling him Common. They were calling him Rashid. So for them, it's just their mate that they work with. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't that kind of space where it's like, oh, let's all show off the fact that we're with Common. And that's also why I didn't. I have like a couple bits of videos that people sent me, but I didn't get content that day. I was prepared to if it was right, but I thought, you know what, this is a little intimate setting.
Yeah.
It's cool that I'm with Common, but I don't need to milk the fact like, oh, Common's standing next to me for my whole DJ set. That I just thought, no, I'll just allow it. But it was cool. But again, it was another job that initially took me out of my comfort zone when I took the booking.
But also an example of where you've been selective, where you're able to take it as well. And that's the beauty of it. You don't need to take everything that comes at you. Just do it if it's right, you know? So.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's power in saying no, as people say, you know? Yeah.
I've got so much better at it. So much better at it.
I have too, you know? I think as a DJ, because there's peaks and troughs in our careers, and there's times, and also like we're not on a salary, we're pay as you go.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so sometimes like, money have to make.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I think what's held me back in those instances is the fear of, let's call it the fear of January. Because January, everything always drops off. Do you know what I mean? So the fear of January has meant that in July, I've been like, yes to everything. Because I know January is going to come at the end of the year, and then I'm going to be sat down for 28 days doing nothing, pretty much, earning no money. So I have to make January's money earlier in the year. But I think if you can get over that fear of January, then you can be more selective and you can say no to things.
Absolutely. And I think that's where the pivot that me and Craig were talking about comes in clutch, because you think about it, clubs are shit, notoriously shit. Like, no one's opening like first 2 weeks of January anyway, like a lot of these high street chains and that. Whereas if you've like positioned yourself in like the kind of restaurant day party early finish kind of scene, there's more opportunities out there for you to obviously kind of work and stuff. And all right, cool, you know, some of the restaurants are dope, some of the restaurants aren't the most glamorous, some of the daytime spots aren't the most glamorous, but if you know that you've got regular work scheduled across like the quieter months and you can still be at home in bed on a Saturday night at like 11-12 o'clock,
that's
the life hack right there.
That's it.
One thing that's held me back with restaurants, I've done them a few times, but I guess it's probably a me problem, because so many DJs are doing restaurant jobs, but they don't have the club budget. Do you know what I mean? Every time, or at least in my experience anyway, every time I've been offered a restaurant job, it's like half of what I would charge for a club set.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, I always struggled to adapt my fee to scenarios, if that makes sense. So like, my club fee is my club fee, but that also comes with like a 3 a.m. or a 4 a.m. finish, and then I'm getting into bed at 6 in the morning. What I didn't really ever compute was, well, okay, if I'm knocking a couple hundred quid off that to do a restaurant, but I'm finishing at 11 p.m. I could be at home by midnight, I could be asleep by 1 a.m. so maybe it's worth
the value for money. Might be better.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
The exchange rate of sleep to cash.
The pounds to Zeds exchange rate is in your favour.
And the beauty of it is as well, like some of these restaurants are booking DJs like Monday through to Sunday. So if you think about it, you might pick up an extra like one or two sets that week or that month, which counteracts, you know, the losing out on a couple hundred pounds that you're getting for that one gig in the club. And if it frees up your Saturday as well, because you've got a midweek, then one, your weekends are more precious with your family and that. And two, if something else does come in, there's extra period in the day.
So,
it's a win-win situation.
And I find as well with those gigs, they're always a lot easier as well.
Yeah. That's what I was about to say. A lot of the time,
say the first couple of hours, you're just playing music while people are eating.
Yeah.
Like, so I use that time to sort out crates. I use that time to, you know,
admin
plates. Play your Robin Fix, do you know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't tend to usually play it, so you can kind of, get thumbs down. But you can dig and, you know, just more so sometimes play for yourself in those moments, but obviously still within doing the job that we do anyway. So again, that's always a bit of a positive. You can get a bit of admin done that you wouldn't probably necessarily
admin
do.
Sets. We've all got admin sets. Yeah. We've all done them.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. With restaurant sets and even like for quite a few like early bar sets and stuff, it's just background music. They're like what I consider as like no pressure sets.
Yeah,
you can play the B-sides, you can play like the cool, just the stuff you want to listen to without the worry of, oh, I've cleared the dance floor with this one, how do I bring it back? So it is a completely different thing. And I think one thing I've always struggled is adapting my mentality to be like, well, it is a completely different type of job, so the pricing structure should be different. Does it come with the benefits that make it worth cutting my fee down? And if so, well, it's worth doing.
And another thing as well, bro. Sorry, Cable. Another thing that I will say from those gigs, I get a lot of secondary gigs from them. Yeah. Like, people are like, oh my God, I love this song. Because they're paying attention to the music a bit more, because obviously they might just be having a one-to-one conversation, not necessarily really loud, and you know, can focus a bit more. I do get a lot of people come up to me saying, do you have a card? Do you have Instagram? You know, and exchange details and getting bookings from it that way as well.
You know,
probably
what,
more so than I did in clubs, I reckon, to be fair.
One of the reasons for that might also be the people in the restaurants, they're an older crowd.
Mm.
They're not the 18 to 22-year-olds turning up.
Mm.
The 18 to 22-year-olds always, especially nowadays, always have a DJ in their friend circle.
Yeah.
So they don't need a DJ for things because little Steve can do it. Do you know what I mean? Whereas in the restaurants, when it's the older lot, generally the older crowd don't have like a hobby DJ in their circle. Or if they do, they're not that good. So it's like, well, actually, we're going to have a 30th birthday party in 6 months. Let's book a proper DJ.
Yeah.
This guy's killing it in the restaurant. Let's get him on board. So I guess that's why. So you're right. It even opens up the opportunity for like new clientele in that aspect.
Yeah, man. I even speaking of our older clientele as well, I did a 50th birthday a couple of weeks ago, and probably hands down like one of my top five gigs this year.
Used to
be a rapper back in the day, and start old like 90s like UK rap kind of days, and he was just like, yeah, here's the brief, and sent me up like a Spotify playlist, and it was all just like boogie, rare groove, a little bit disco, but all like cool tasteful stuff like Central Line and, you know, like Phyllis Hyman and shit like that, like, no, you know, not like ABBA or anything, Babe, or like, you know out like Chaka Khan album cuts and everything, and a bit of 90s hip hop, and literally just did that for 2.5 hours and paid really, really well. And I was just like, this is sick. And it was like an older crowd, fully dressed up, like all looking like really nice and suave and that.
Yeah.
And like I've been having more fun doing those types of gigs, and even, dare I say it, like the ways that some of the Christmas corporates are structured as well. Being able to kind of play that during the kind of, you know, some of these have been like sit down meals as well, so being able to kind of run obviously a couple of Christmas tracks but play that kind of music during a set, and then alright cool, got to play like a bit of commercial stuff like later on because, you know, it comes with the territory. But
yeah,
I've had more fun doing that than say like generic like hip hop and R&B in the clubs and even the restaurant things. A lot of restaurants have house music as well, so I'm able just to kind of get in my bag and just play like soulful house and all the stuff that I'm trying to kind of align myself with at the moment.
That's dope, man. It is good. It's interesting to see the evolution though, isn't it? Because there is a time early in my career where there's absolutely no way I would have ever done a wedding. I wouldn't have done a private party. I wouldn't have even considered being on radio. I was through and through like, nope, I'm going to be a club DJ and that's what I'm going to do forever. And yeah, now I'm just like, right, how do I not be a club DJ?
Yeah. They're dying a slow death, aren't they, unfortunately?
You know what?
Very slow death.
It's difficult because actually, I was telling Cable this before we press record. I've picked up in September two residencies, weekly residencies, which were a godsend because I don't have the January fear anymore because they're running through January, which is cool.
Sick.
And one of them's in Kingston, which pre-COVID was my favourite place to DJ in the UK. I had a residency at Viper Rooms and it was absolutely sick. Now, this one that I do on Saturdays, it's Circuit in Kingston. So it's the old prison.
Mm-hmm.
And the crowd in there are just 10 out of 10.
Buzzing.
They are the perfect crowd. It's the perfect balance of playing like the commercial side, but being able to really go in if I want to. Do you know what I mean? With the dancehall, I'm actually going in to proper, proper dancehall.
Yeah.
And it's going off. And I was even saying before we pressed record, like, soca music's big in there as well. There's a huge Caribbean group in there that are always asking for soca. So I've done my research, gone down a rabbit hole and discovered this whole new genre for myself. Like, and it's sick. I'm really enjoying playing soca to them. So like, for me, I would say like this club in particular is definitely not dying a death. Like it's proper, it's sick. It's one of my favourite things to do in the week.
Love that.
So, but I do see, and I'm going to other clubs where it's like, oh yeah, this 2 years ago, this place was jumping.
I think a lot of it's location dependent as well. Like Colchester, for example, is not necessarily a big city. You don't get much tourism coming to Colchester. So the clubs here are just nosediving. Whereas like if you go London, Manchester, I guess those clubs are typically more thriving because, you know.
Yeah,
well, I think a lot of the popular ones in Manchester have shut down now as well.
Have they really?
Yeah. I was up there the other week and...
Lives the life,
it's like very much like bars and late night spots rather than clubs. The clubs apparently aren't doing so well.
Wow, that's crazy.
Like, which one's is Liv, the one on the corner that like used to be a church or something? Which one's that?
Yeah, I think that's Liv. And then
I think that shut down.
What?
I think last time, not the time I've just been, but the time before that I was in Manchester, it shut down.
Damn, man. Because I think yours is the spot on Sunday. I know G2's there. Stylus has got, obviously, his compound parties, which are like going crazy at the moment. Like, he's done really, really well with that, building up to what it is.
He's smashed it, bro.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he's absolutely killed it. Sorry, one sec. Sun's just texted me. What do you want?
But yeah, Colchester's a weird one because I think even though you've got the uni there, like even the students aren't really leaving campus these days either. They just like stay on campus. And even then I'm seeing like a lot of offers come through the DJ group like to kind of cover Essex Uni like midweek and stuff. And yeah, the kind of budget they want for the hours involved is not really...
I was playing there on a Wednesday and it was like 150 for like 11 till 2. It's my doorstep. And they tried reducing it. I was like, do you know what? I'm just going to get my sleep, man. Get my sleep, honestly. Like, 150 was low enough, do you know what I mean? Like, especially for the late night, midweek, but...
Yeah. I'll tell you what is popping, believe it or not. Mojo is in Norwich.
Is it?
Yeah. Saturdays are good there, man. Like,
that's good to hear.
I'm there, like, on a semi-regular basis on, like a Saturday night. Shout out Kendrick and the rest of the team there. And it's a very, very like African and Caribbean crowd in there. So you can really kind of go in with like dancehall and Afrobeats and like kind of current hip hop and a bit of a younger crowd. But there's the students from that like ACS that will come down and they're like, cool, this is what we go to the weekend. Whereas they ain't got that anymore because obviously Mantra is shut down fully.
Yeah. RIP.
And yeah.
Rest in peace.
they ran that place into the ground, bro. And Bar and Beyond up the roads are like, still doing relatively well with like the locals and that. But yeah, it's just like a lot of late night bars and
it's a shame when you see clubs die.
Yeah,
especially if they're clubs where you've had good sets and like you've got good memories from them places, when you just see them.
I wouldn't say I got very good memories from Mantra, but yeah.
Yeah, it's just the thing is Mantra as well. It was self inflicted. I think they become very complacent. They didn't pivot. Mm-hmm. They didn't adapt.
Yeah,
they got their chain taken and then they didn't pivot and didn't adapt and then they end up shutting. So it happens, you know. It's just a shame to see because obviously you've all got a lot of us have got fond memories in a lot of these places that are being closed down.
Plus that's people that have ended up out of a job as well. Like door staff, bar staff, you know, anyone else that are right down to the operations managers and people that worked in the office and that. So hopefully, I don't know, I think a lot of them have either gone to kind of sister venues or like, you know, left Norwich or graduated because they were students at the time. But yes, that's kind of like the sad reality is that, yeah, club goes, but, you know, there's a lot of people that are affected by it as well.
Exactly.
I want to make a prediction for 2026, right? I think the importance of the DJ is coming back. I think 2026, we're going to see a resurgence in DJs being the trendsetters and the tastemakers for certain movements and things like that. I think at the moment it's been spearheaded by DJ AG. He's
legend.
Absolute legend.
Smashed it, man.
Yeah.
But through everything he's done, he has brought back and shown people the importance of the DJ. Do you know what I mean? What his platform has built, people are like, they're watching all these live artists and they're discovering new talent and all of this stuff. They're not doing it through just like whatever Spotify suggests or this. They're actually, AG's providing a platform for all of these people, as well as having the big artists come through and that kind of cements it, gives the stamp of approval, you know. It's like, yeah, this is the right platform to come to.
Yeah,
but where he opens it up, I think. So I think he's, yeah, spearheading the possibility, I think probability, that next year, 2026, there is going to be more than a handful of DJs that take initiative, start platforms, and then become the tastemakers again.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's definitely more the role of being like a tastemaker and kind of, showing people what's hot. And I think whether it's like an online platform or you're a DJ that, say like Stylus in question, you know, starts Compound, but he's bringing other DJs who he rates to Manchester, mm-hmm. and they shy it down. Now, you know, like, that Compound party is synonymous with having good DJs, regardless of like who's on the lineup as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, it's going to be an interesting time. How those online platforms look like, I don't know. Whether it's going to be people either going to be like a direct copy of AG's thing, or it's going to be almost like a kind of mini boiler room kind of thing, or like a Keep Hush or something like that. I don't know. But I'm here for it.
Because there's quite a few in there. Like, I think you're right, Double, in that sense. Like, you've got things like Vibram as well. That's quite similar. You know, it's quite DJ focused or musician focused.
Is Vibram the one with the band, the guys that sing along with the DJ? I quite like that concept.
Yeah,
I enjoy really looking good. At that.
There's quite a few online that are similar as well. The names have gone from here, but actually,
Apartment Life's like the other
Apartment Life. Apartment Life. I see like quite a few like in America that do it as well.
The one I know from America is called Playground, and I only know that one because Joe LaBelle's done it, and I've seen it. I think he's done it a couple times now, but I've seen it on his socials and stuff.
But
you're right. There are a lot of platforms that there's one, I think it might be in Singapore, but I'm not 100% certain. And there's a guy who DJs there, and he does some proper insane, like little, very clever little wordplay.
I know exactly what you're on about.
What's his DJ name?
I don't know.
Siang or something.
It's something like that, but he's very good.
Yeah.
He's very good, yeah.
I haven't seen this.
I'm going to quickly look it up.
Comes up on my TikTok all the time. Almost guarantee it'll come up. I load it now, to be fair. That's gonna rattle me. But he's an Asian guy, Asian DJ, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so it's in Taiwan, it's not in Singapore. And his name, I found him, but it doesn't show his name. Siang, yeah, it is Siang. Sheng Siang. Let me just gonna double check. Sorry if this blasts music. Is this the guy? Sorry, everyone. I know this is taking. Oh, did you hear that?
No, what was that?
Good. That was just so loud. I opened TikTok on my desktop. Blasted my eyeballs out the front of my head. Yeah, Shen Siang is his name, but he's like. He's probably one of the most intelligent DJs I've ever seen. Like, his wordplay, he hears things differently. Because his wordplays are like simple tricks, but very, like.
Very effective.
Very effective. Very effective and very, like, thought through.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, yeah, that works. Like, it's sick. But yeah, he's pretty sick. And I don't know if it's his platform or if he's just constantly on this platform. But I see his sets quite a lot. But. Yeah, there's a lot, man. There's a lot of DJ platforms. But I think specifically DJs that take control of the platform and then bring other talent through.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be the movement in 2026.
I think there's going to be several
DJs. Probably regional. You'll probably have like an up north one, a down south one, maybe a couple more London ones. Obviously, DJ AG's on the throne for everyone at the moment. But, yeah, I think that's what will happen. And also, I've noticed, obviously, DJ AG is getting booked for a lot of clubs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think clubs will realise the value of booking someone for X amount of money and actually getting an hour out of them instead of booking someone for X amount of money and getting a 10-minute PA.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? I think they'll start to realise, oh, actually, we can get an hour performance out of this person. And everybody loves it, rather than just like someone flies through the club, performs, and then leaves. So yeah, I think that's my prediction for next year.
That's a nice prediction. I like that.
Yeah. I just wonder who it would be. I want to know who's got the energy to do it now. It ain't me. Something popped up in the group chat the other day. Somebody was talking about. Cancellations, an agency that cancelled a booking and then they weren't sure if they were going to get paid, etc. This is definitely a situation that's happened time and time and time again. So I wanted to talk with you guys discussing contracts and things with agencies, which obviously we can revisit this when we discuss your movement more in the future, Craig. Mm-hmm. But like there's a lot of things I think because sorry, Craig.
Cable.
We don't have to talk about contracts if you want. Okay, contracts? I'm out of here.
Yeah, no, I just have to let the cat in. She's like eyeballing me through the window. She's like, if you don't let me in, I'm going to piss all over your bed. So.
But yeah, contracts, because one thing I've noticed from the dawn of time for me as a DJ is contracts are very few and far between. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? There's not really. And when we are given contracts, they're never in our favour. Do you know what I mean?
And what a lot of people need to understand is that contracts are not one-sided. So if someone sends you a performance agreement and it's like this, even like a management thing or an agency side of thing, you're well within your right to query certain clauses in that contract and say, I don't like this. Why is this in there? Can we change this? Or counter and say, no, these are actually my terms. So let's kind of come to a compromise here.
And that is something that I think so many people overlook or don't realize that you can do that. Because especially me as a younger DJ, if I was dealing with contracts, I didn't realize that, you can negotiate the contract. I thought, this is the binding agreement. Like you told me the rules.
Yeah.
I don't like this, and this, but I'd quite like the job, so I just have to accept it. Well, no, actually, let's just say... you have a contract with a company and they say, right, we'll do the job and then you invoice us and you'll be paid within 100 days. You can be like, well, actually, I'd like to be paid within 28 days. Yeah. And that is my term. So you can respond with that and say, you know, 100 days is not right, 28 days. And one thing I completely overlooked was the fact that you can negotiate these contracts and put in your terms.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't really had many contracts previously. Like when you did like the old Deltic or Luminar things, you have like a
requisition.
I've had a few contracts with private clients that I've written myself. Mm-hmm. I say written myself, got ChatGPT to write for me and sent out and they've signed and, you know, it kind of covers a bit, explains terms and conditions and stuff. But I've never really had a contract, to be honest with you. So I can't even say that I've even... worked with them much, to be fair. The agency that I work with at the moment as well, they're really good in terms of like cancellations and stuff, so I've had no problems with them. I don't have much experience with them, to be honest, with contracts. I haven't actually used them all, really.
Well, this is the thing. They are, like I said, they're like few and far between in the DJ world, which is mental to me, like when you think about it. But unfortunately, it's the nature of the industry we're in.
Yeah,
and with so many DJs about, it's like, well, actually, I don't want to enter into this agreement without a contract. Oh, okay, then don't. Then we'll just get someone else.
Yeah, I think with residencies as well, like if you're there like every Saturday or every Friday or whatnot, I think they should be a lot more prevalent than what they are.
Yeah.
Because although you don't want to be classed as an employee or a member of staff, we are contractors.
Yeah.
We're external contractors. In any other industry you work in, you would have a contract.
Not
you know,
only that.
Contractor is in the word, you know?
Literally.
So it's quite strange. You're right. It's very strange that we don't really deal with them on a regular basis.
If you're a resident at a club, for example, and the club books a guest DJ or an artist to perform, they enter a contract with the agency.
Yeah.
The agency will send a contract. The club or promoter will have to sign that off before the artist even considers going to the club.
Yeah.
So it's like they have the capacity to do it. It's just for some reason in our line of work as regular DJs, I would say, it's not a thing. And I think if you say to a club, I'd like to put a contract in place for the residency, you'll get laughed out of the room.
To an extent, I think one is whether they see any value in you as a DJ, as an individual. And two, if you're in a residency and say things are popping and they really like you and they like working with you, then you then have the leverage to turn around and be like, look, I like DJing here. I like DJing with you guys. I want to make this long term. Let's draw up an agreement and more time. If you're in their good books and stuff, they'll be like, all right, cool, let's chat. And then that's when you could, you know, start dictating things like any sort of, not necessarily statutory sick pay, but, you know, any cancellation fees and things like that. Obviously, with like private gigs and weddings and everything like that, then yeah, that's all contracted. I've got templates for that stuff as well. And even however many years down the line of like doing privates and stuff like that, I'm always like adding and changing clauses. So like I did an outdoor gig around kind of fireworks and that, right? And they had me in between like two massive fire pits. So like my whole gear just like stank of fucking Guy Fawkes by the end of it. So I had to like spend like,
Guy
Fawkes
fee.
Yeah, bro, that's the thing. So like now my contract is like any outdoor gig, I need to be at least 500 meters away from open fire. Otherwise you'll be billed for any replacement of equipment.
500 meters?
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere
half
near.
Half a kilometer.
I'm not going anywhere near no open flame, no fire pit, because literally I had to spend like 2 weeks like cleaning my shit with alcohol wipes, white vinegar. Like I had the charcoal bags in the storage unit to like to get rid of the smell and stuff. And
flipping
most
out.
Of it's kind of gone now. But imagine if you're spending or you're bringing like about up to $5,000 worth of equipment.
Yeah.
And, all right, there's no smoke damage just per se, but say you do that gig and then you've got a set up for a wedding or another corporate the next day. And you come in there smelling like gunpowder. Like, the client's going to be like, what the fuck is this smell? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, yeah, no, yeah. I hear that. 500 metres is a lot, though.
It's very far.
That is very far. Cable's and like, there's no fire at the party. That's it.
Exactly. So I'm the only one that's bringing the fire, my friends. You know what I mean?
Yes.
What about those like, fire breathers and stuff? Did that count?
Well, that's just like, well, it's not a fire pit. So like, if they want to like blow fire out of their mouth or whatever, that's cool. But,
just not at you.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's the smoke rather than the fire, isn't it?
Yeah,
exactly. That's true, and that's the thing that clings to everything.
Yeah.
Like, imagine like if you go to when like we was out clubbing or DJing and people used to be able to smoke inside a club, right? Oh, so going back along,
it's the same thing.
You come home that and like was... your record would stink, like everything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was the worst. I remember like, taking my clothes off at the end of the night. Especially I used to smoke when I DJed, but when I'd stopped smoking and smoking was still a thing, like. Yeah, mm-hmm. Taking your clothes off at the end of the night and just, oh. Ugh.
Reeks.
It is so weird to think that was a thing.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just mad.
I get weirded out with people vaping near me in the club. Honestly, I do. People are vaping near me.
I mean,
to
be fair, I'd rather smell like strawberry daiquiri vape than like someone's like eggy fart, because there's nothing to kind of like mask that smell anymore.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
It's like free air freshener.
Or like the waft of piss that comes from when someone opens like the toilet door.
There was one club I used to play at. That waft of piss came from the carpet. It was disgusting.
The carpets, man. Yeah. The worst.
Yeah.
The worst. Fucking hell.
That's like every Celtic venue across the country, to be fair.
Literally.
Yeah, I don't know if they have carpets now, but no, this one, it was disgusting. But yeah, so anyway, coming back around to contracts, I think, it's a short topic, but it is one that people need to know, like, when you get sent one, if there's stuff on it, first of all, make sure you absolutely read it.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, like, if there's stuff on it you don't like, question it or change it and send that back and say, I've made a couple of amendments. Similarly, if there's stuff on there, that if there's stuff you want on there, like being 500 miles away from the nearest open fire, just add that into the contract and send it back.
Yeah, so, and the other thing as well is that if you say you're not really too familiar with contracts or things look a bit like jargon to you, ChatGPT is there to have a look at, summarize it for you. So you could like literally upload the contract and be like, summarize this for me in layman's terms. And is this one-sided for the performer or for the venue? And it will just give you a detailed breakdown.
Oh, I feel like ChatGPT's... I think it's useful, but I do think people rely on it too much. And I think it's... In my experience, anyway, it's not always correct when it comes to legal stuff. Because I've tested it with a few things in the past. And it's kind of a bit of like a yes man.
I think it depends on how much information you give it to look for.
Mm.
Like if you just give it quite a surface level task, it might give you a surface level response. But like Cambridge mentioned, if you say, you know, is it in favour of XYZ, break this down. Like if you give it a bit more instruction, it definitely does. I use it every single day for work, so I know it does work. Like,
so you need to tell it to not be biased and give an impartial answer, and it doesn't pander to you, to be as brutal as like give you brutal honesty, and to use search engines and any kind of prior information that's been put into the agent. You know, because obviously, you know, if we're like, say, like, I don't know, asking it questions or giving it information about DJ products, it'll retain that information, and someone else will be like, oh, what's the best mixer? And it would use that data to learn and stuff. Obviously, knowing a bit of contract law yourself, like, it's always good to kind of study that, like, just basics in your own free time. But another thing you can do as well is to stress test with another model as well. So if you're, you know, you're drawing up your contract and you want to make sure it's like legally sound, obviously you can ask ChatGPT. But what you can do is then take what ChatGPT says, put it into another model, say like Gemini or Claude or whatever, and it will stress test it. And then you take those results and put it back into ChatGPT. It's called a devil's advocate test that a lot of solicitors do. They'll, you know, build their case and then they'll, you know, like basically try and pick apart like what, you know, what is weak about the case and stuff.
Yeah. Clever.
Yeah, mate.
Yeah, it is.
That's,
it
a,
is
that's a key right there, okay? We gave a key right there, mate.
Major key.
Major key.
Major key. Are you guys on Serato 4.0? 0.1, 0.2, 0.7, whatever they're on to now.
4.01.
I'm not yet. And the reason being is I feel like I've kind of taken a leaf out of your book, Double, because I'm currently on Monterey at the moment, and my version of Final Cut Pro might not be compatible with a later OS X. So, yeah, based off of that and not wanting to pay another £300 for...
What, have you
software.
Got a cracked version of Final Cut?
I have a copy of Final Cut Pro on my laptop. Cannot confirm or deny whether it's cracked or not.
Say no more. Say no more. Right. Yeah, I get it.
I just installed it. And whether that works for, you might have to edit the shit out. I don't want Apple to like fucking like kill bill me or anything. You know? But based off of that, I'm a bit reluctant to like update my OS X so I can actually fully install 4.0. But from what I've seen, it looks sick.
It's, to be honest with you, it's not really much difference from a performance aspect. Mm. Like you can, you know, search for crates. You can search, like when you click on a song, you can right click and see what crates it's in. So I think it's more so from a workflow, it's better. Mm-hmm. I've seen some people moaning about some things that are really, I've never even used before. So like the whole browse feature, never used the browse feature in my life, ever. I only ever
what
used.
What do you mean the browse feature?
So you know, if you go on Serato, where it's got like files and stuff,
yeah,
files.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a browse feature, or there used to be anyway.
Right, yeah, yeah.
They've got rid of that.
Okay.
Like I've never ever used it, like ever, not once. The history, I know some people lost their history. There might have been a bug where their history got went missing.
Right, yeah.
Mine was there. I might have got lucky, I guess, but even I don't really look in my history typically, unless I'm like, you know, speaking to someone about a gig that they might be covering me for, and I might send them my history so they can get reference and whatnot. But other than that, it's just, yeah, I think from a workflow perspective, it is makes things a lot better. You can color code your crates, you can search for crates. Yeah, it's just small things. You can set emojis as ratings and stuff, you know, just, yeah, you can set ratings, which I don't think you could have done previously. I never did anyway, previously.
Yeah, you can only do that in
Recordbox. The ratings thing's a weird thing, because for me, like, I think I've always thought as a DJ, you have to know your music.
Yeah.
So in my head, I already have the ratings for these songs.
Yeah.
I already know what's going to slap and what's not, and like what's hot right now, what's getting too old, and what goes into what. Like, I have all my ratings are in here. I don't need them as a visual cue.
Yep.
So for me, I'm just like, it's a bit of a, I get why some people might use them, but for me, it's a bit like.
Yeah, I agree mostly, but the reason why I say I would actually start using them now is I'm going on a bit of a journey of deleting music.
Right.
Like re-downloading 320s rather than having 96 KBBs and stuff. Like I'm going from A to Z, just completely doing my library, and I'm finding songs that I forgot about.
Right.
You know, because my crates are either too deep or not enough. So I'm actually reformatting my crates as well. Like, for example, I'm using years now. I never really use years. But because I've got so much music now, I'm trying to break up a bit. So I'm not forgetting more music.
Right.
And the
ratings
helps with that. So, for example, I'm not necessarily, say, a tech house DJ or a deep house DJ. So I can use those ratings as like a reference to say, ah, right, okay, cool, I remember that. Rather than going through each song trying to remember, shit, do I know that song or not?
Yeah, fair.
You know, so... For that point of view, it does help. R&B and stuff, of course, we know what we like to play and what people will work for people. But for other genres you're not too familiar with, I think it does help.
Yeah.
It just depends on how you want to use it, I guess. If you're into organization and making your workflow easier, great. If you're not, then you don't really need to have the new Serato, I'd say. One big thing that is quite good, though, is it analyzes tracks live.
When you put them in.
When you've got hardware connected.
Yeah.
So that's really helpful. Like if you, you know, at a private gig and someone sends you a request, you haven't got it, you can download it on the fly, upload it, and, you know, get all the data, the key, etc. So that's, I think that's probably the best feature so far that I found.
Yeah, that's probably the most useful.
Absolutely.
So like one thing, I guess I should probably, everyone listening or watching, I have finally upgraded my laptop.
Have you got like a soundboard there? We can do round of applause or like yeehaw or anything, you know, gunshots.
Yeah, I'm on a 2021 M1 Pro now.
Ooh, look at him.
Sick.
We've been here for like a month and oh my word. Stems. I know the thing is.
I'm actually going to take credit.
Everyone else has been on stems for like 5 years. No, you can't take credit.
No, we're taking credit for just
the pressure.
No, because it wasn't the pressure. My laptop died. Like it literally. I promise you, I did a thing in Vegas in October, and got back, and then did. A club set, but the laptop was being a bit scatty during the club set.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, I think it might be on the way out.
The next you were trying to burn USBs like before you went on, right?
Yeah, that's right. And literally, because I was like, yeah, I don't think the laptop's going to survive. The laptop survived the whole club set.
Beautiful.
The next morning, it wouldn't turn on. Literally, that was a Tuesday
night. Gave you one
night.
Last ride, pause.
Yeah, literally.
Amazing.
And then Wednesday morning wouldn't turn on.
That is amazing.
The other thing is, I didn't have to DJ until Friday. So it was like, oh, this is sick. If it had died on a Friday afternoon, I'd have been fucked because I had to DJ Friday. So I actually had a couple of days. So yeah, ordered a new Mac and it came, just quickly set it up. I actually managed to get the old hard drive out of the old Mac as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it in, I've got it here actually. Put it in this little device.
Sick.
Oh, sick.
It's called a Jorker.
Close.
It's called a Jorker. I put it into my Jorker. And plugged it into the new Mac. And I was able to get all of the data, including my Serato folder with all of the crates.
Sick.
So, but the Jorker.
That's another major key right there.
Yeah, the Jorker.
Where do
don't
I get
don't go
one
without
from?
A Jorker. And then when you're done with that, get a hard drive reader. I had to do one set actually before the Jorker had arrived. So I had Serato but no crates.
Mm-hmm.
So I just had the all. I had all my music
beautiful.
In.
Oh, all. Mate. Chaos.
And
fresh.
Let me tell you, yeah, that was hands down the most complicated set I've ever done in my life. Having to just go, because even going through BPMs,
yeah,
I'll have a rap song and then like a reggae song, then a reggaeton song, and all the genres were all mixed up.
Fucking
and it
hell.
Was, mate, it was chaos. Absolute chaos. But I got through. It was mentally exhausting. And then the next day, the Jorker arrived. And I managed to rescue.
It's class, isn't it? The Jorker arrived.
And then, yeah, when I was finished with that, I managed to rescue my Serato crates. So happy
That's
days.
That's beautiful.
But I'm
glad. I'm happy that you're not on Victorian technology. Yeah.
I'm happy your laptop died.
Yeah, I still happy. Have it. I still have it over here. I'm not quite sure. I'm just going to get it. And show you. I'm not quite sure what to do with it now.
Frame it.
Possibly. I might try and find a way to make this still light up. just have it.
Plug the lithium batteries into it, mate.
Well, actually, I did take it to Apple and they replaced the battery because it was on a battery recall from about 8 years ago.
Oh, wow.
But I could never be without it for a week. So now it was dead. I was like, well, you might as well take it. And they were like, oh, yeah, you can still, because it's within 10 years of the battery recall. They were like, yeah, we'll still do the battery. So it's actually
got a
whole new battery and a new keyboard courtesy of Apple. Cost me nothing.
That's sick.
It turns on now as well.
Buzzing.
Yeah.
So you've got a backup.
So, well, I don't know if I trust it. It takes about 10 minutes to load up.
Okay.
And turn on. So it's crippled.
Okay. That's the thing I found. I always thought that my 2015 like MacBook Pro was like relatively quick. And then when I got the M1, I literally like booted up. I was like, oh my God, this is so fast. And then when I went back to it, I was like, How did I wait 10 minutes for Serato to load up?
But even down to like video editing. So I do a lot of video editing. On that old machine, like a 10-minute video will take 40 minutes to render.
Yeah.
I do it, no lie, in about 30 seconds on this machine. And I'm just like, how was I spending so much time waiting for files to be ready? And then I'm on this one. But the main thing is DJing with stems has been an absolute game changer. And I know everybody has told me, like, oh, when you finally get on stems, you're going to absolutely love it. And
you just absolutely love it.
Yeah, I do. I feel like I have just discovered DJing.
Mm.
Like, genuinely, I have that love for it again at the moment where I'm like, this is incredible because I'm just doing so much of the stuff that I did live, where I do live mashups and I put the acapellas in, and I do a lot of that in my club sets anyway.
Mm.
But I'll then have to really quickly switch out from the acapella on the other side to the normal version, which I've had to line up and get in time really quickly to get, do you know what I mean? To let the beat drop in and stuff. And it's like, now it's just the push of a button.
Yeah.
And I use the SP1 mm-hmm. or I'm using the S9 mixer. So depending on the club, if it's like a club where drinks might fly into the DJ, like my one in Kingston, they have a balcony above and drinks always land.
Mate,
I'm always getting drinks Christ. On. Always. So yeah, my mixer doesn't come there. Yeah, my mixer doesn't come there.
500 meters from balconies.
But my mixer doesn't come to that club with me. I just bring the SP1. And luckily, where the DJ booth is, it's like half under the balcony. So my laptop stays in the sheltered side, and then I'm on the bit where it just constantly fucking rains. Using the SP1 just makes the stems accessibility so quick, the push of a button.
Yeah.
So I normally MIDI map the spare headphone cues on the other channels mm-hmm. on the
you can do that.
DJM. Yeah.
Right. Got you. Yeah.
Because I'm too cheap to buy an SP1.
Same.
Sorry. Well, no, the thing is I had the SP1 for ages. I've had it I've had it probably about 3 years anyway. But maybe even longer, you know. But it's just game changer. I've now got my entire library as acapellas if I want them, or my entire library as instrument. And I'm just, club sets are so much more interesting now.
So much more fun for you as well. More than just the punters as well. You can be creative. You can make your own edits live. Transition from different genres. Like you mentioned earlier with Ahsoka and like jungle or reggae, you can just do that.
Yeah.
A job for her, you know?
One thing I've seen, I think the most common way that DJs use stems is as they're mixing out of a song.
Mm.
Let's just say they're using 8 bars of a chorus.
Mm.
Then the song that's singing the chorus, they'll cut the instrumental.
Yeah.
And they'll use the song that's coming in as the intro.
Yeah.
So they're overlaying it like that. But
what
I've started to do as well, I don't know if this is common or not, but like using Taliban's is a good example. When I start that, I've cut the beat out. There's no drums. It's just bass and melody and singing. And then everyone's singing along. But it completely changes the rhythm.
Gives it like a slow down.
It gives it, it's like a slow jam effect. And then when it gets to the right part, just hit the instrumental button again and it brings the snare and then the kick and then it just slaps so much. It's like you're restructuring and reproducing the music.
Yeah, it's funny you say. I saw Sean Cable. Sean B, he done that with Here I Am. Do you remember Nelly? And
Here I Am.
So he done that for the beginning of Here I Am, and when obviously the beat drops and the chorus stops and stuff.
Yeah,
So it does really work. It's like a different layer of energy, doesn't it? So I quite
like
it.
Yeah. I did it with Fantasia When I See You.
Yeah,
the other day, and it just literally just starts with like dum dum dum. That's the only thing playing, but it's recognizable straight away.
Yeah,
and everyone's going sick, and then for the next couple of bars, bring the bass in.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the time for the actual lyrics to start, bang, you can put the beat.
Yeah.
Well, actually, what I did with this one was I let half the verse play without the drums.
Mm-hmm.
So it was literally just, but you can just changed the mood. You can hear how excited I am talking
about it, bro. Like, I'm waiting for Blendemic 3.0 where
that's it.
I put Sean Paul over Bon Jovi and it snaps.
No, but what I did do, you two will be familiar with the Christmas rhythms.
Yes.
Yeah. Big up for the One Extra support on that as well.
That's Nadia J that did that. That's my host.
Big up Nadia, man.
She played one every morning on the breakfast show last week.
That's brilliant.
I really enjoyed putting that together. Not a project for anybody to take seriously anywhere, but just fun. And people were sending me videos and voice notes like, "Yeah, I'm playing it in a club and it worked."
Da-da-da-da. And that's it, bro. The amount of people that complain about playing Christmas music, like, it makes Christmas music fun, I guess, is probably absolutely the word we use for it, you know, like, and like you mentioned with Stems, we can make Mariah Carey a little bit more respectable than
I put Sean Paul and Sasha on Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You.
There you go, see?
Bangs. I put Chronics and Protégé on one as well. I can't remember which one it was.
I've synced
the video with the Christmas version and they're all in the video like this. I'm going to be posting it on my Instagram over the next week, but like those videos, like, yeah, it's just fun. It's been
I'm glad you're there, mate. Yeah. Welcome.
Speaking of Mariah, how many DJs out there this Christmas season do you think are slamming Soulja Boy into Mariah Carey?
Everybody is.
Everyone, man.
I've actually never done that. The first person I ever saw do that was CB. I don't know if he was the first to do it, but he was the first I ever saw do it. Yeah. But now, for a joke, every year he posts the fact that he's going to be doing it. Yeah, and then everyone else is going to be doing it. The first person
I saw do it was Kieran J. Ages ago. But yeah,
I think it might have been the same thing, and I was like, oh yeah, that's a good idea.
It's clever, that, yeah. It's clever. Like, you know, it gets you out of a really shit song into a, you know, not necessarily a good song, but, you know, a crowd pleaser.
Quite
quickly, you know.
For the right crowd that they're not on the DJ algorithm side of social media, they will have never heard it before.
Exactly.
That's who you're doing it for as well. There's quite a good one. I was doing quite a bit of research. Probably spent too much time researching it, to be fair, when I was doing these Christmas dancehall rhythms, because I didn't want to copy anyone else's work. I wanted it all to be original. So when I was coming up with ideas, I was making sure it didn't exist anywhere. And I was trying to work out the best one to do with the Mariah Carey one. And I found one DJ. I can't remember what song it was, but he put Vybz Kartel on it. I say it goes, "All I want for Christmas is... pum pum." And then it drops into Cartel. It was fucking hilarious. Man, I was like, I wish I'd thought of it. I do wish I'd thought of it. But yeah, he killed it with that one. But yeah, Stems. I'm really enjoying Stems. Coming back to Serato 4.0, I think is maybe because I'm a bit of a creature of habit and I don't like change. I don't know if you can tell. But it might be that it's just too much change all in one go for me, but I don't like what they've done with Serato 4.0. I think there's a lot of pointless stuff in there.
Do you want to make your life easy, Double?
Yes.
Change the name of your current Serato to Serato Double.
So you can have two.
Download it and see for yourself if you like it. If you don't like it, delete it. If you like it, keep it.
Yeah.
Because nothing changes then. You don't actually have to change.
I'm on it. No, this is the thing. So I'm on Serato 4.0.1.
Oh, you are? Okay, cool.
Yeah. As soon as it came, I got on it. But I just don't like it.
What do you like about it?
Because it's different. I think there's too much stuff in there that isn't necessary for me.
Okay. Like what?
There's two... In the library field, next to where the colours used to be, there's now two other ones. There used to only be one that would tell you if your thing is corrupt. There's now two.
Uh-huh.
They've given you the option to select what fields you have in the thing, which was there before. But they haven't given you the option to take those extra two out.
Okay, yeah.
Which they should. Because now
what
I have... I actually can't remember. One of them is like file status or something. So whether it's missing...
But what's the other one though?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I think it's nothing. I just think... And it's like... Get rid of it. But even stuff like the drop down menu to select the fields. If you've got 10 fields in a crate that you want to chop down to 3, you can't just drop the menu down and select which ones you want. every time you click, it disappears, and you have to click again and go down and disappears.
Do you reckon, it's just like a bug?
No, I think that's because that's how it used to be in the old drop down menu. You select right, one okay. and that disappears. I just think it's bad functionality.
But that's a very small thing, though.
But it bugs me. It is a small yeah. thing. But for a feature that I do use, it's irritating.
Yeah.
I think, let me just try and think what else. I don't really, because I have my methods, I don't use the search crate feature.
Me neither, to be fair.
I don't need to search the crate. Mm-hmm. I know where a song is. And I'll just search, if I need a song and I can't find it quickly, I'll just search the whole library. And it just, control F, bang, types, and it's there. Do you know what I mean? I don't need to know what.
Do you like the feature where you can search for the whole library and still remain within the crate as well? I think that's quite handy.
I do think it's useful, but I'm not used to it yet. So every time I do it, it catches me off guard.
Yeah.
The other thing is, these are all very small things, I'm aware, but when you tab through, you know, if you have the prepare window and your library and the crates, when you tab through, I think they've reversed the direction the tab goes.
Oh, so because it would normally go crates, prepare window, and then your
and the library.
Crate window.
Yeah. And then so if you press tab, so it would move clockwise around the screen almost.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's going anti-clockwise around the screen now.
I've never used that, so I wouldn't even seen it, to be fair.
But it's something I use regularly and to move quickly. So I'm not having to move the cursor around. It's something. But there's also, it's not. How can I explain this? Let's just say there's three windows for you to tab through. For some reason, it's taking four clicks to get back to where I need it to be. So it's going from the prepare window somewhere else, then to crates, then to library. So
is it going to the search bar?
Maybe, yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah. I haven't figured that out yet because it's whenever I'm using it, I have to use it quick. I'm using it to navigate fast. So it's just, like I said, it's just functionality of certain things. Where I'm like, it wasn't broken. Like, it didn't need fixing. It didn't need an update. But I get it from them because they have to keep innovating. They've got Rekordbox on their heels. And also with, like, DJ Pro and... what's the other one? The shit one.
Virtual DJ.
Nah. It's not even shit. I just call it the
Virtual
shit.
Virtual DJ?
Yes. It's not even shit. It's actually really good software. Yeah. But it just used to be the shit plugging through the aux, through the headphone cable thing. Even Virtual DJ, like, they're on the heels of Serato when it comes to features and all of this stuff.
I saw something called, is it One DJ? Where they're looking to combine softwares, basically, is my understanding of it. Am I right in saying that, Cable?
I saw Mojack. Like a...
Is that Laid Back Luke's thing? He's got a thing as well, hasn't he?
No, he's with... So he's got a deal with, like, ReLoop, I think, and Algorithm DJ Pro. So he just uses, like, a little MIDI controller and DJs off his phone.
I
think One DJ is more like a... Almost like a lexicon, I think. It's almost like a library management thing that you can import to everywhere else. How comprehensive it is compared to lexicon, I don't know. Lexicon is kind of like the goat when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously you've got DJ Conversion Utility, which is pretty good anyway, but I think that's the only takeaway I've got from it. I was going to say, with like 4.0, you've got the option to have like your favourite crates at the top as well, right?
Yep. Yeah, that's quite nice. So you can move your crates to the top.
So yeah, similar with Traktor, where I used it for a while, you had like where your library window is there. You had like a little space for crates that you could kind of access by clicking them. So
nice.
I'm glad they finally got something like that. But
I haven't explored that part. So what is that? You can keep. So for example, I've got my hip hop and R&B folder, and then I've got like main set, new stuff, R&B throwbacks, hip hop throwbacks, slow jams. If I wanted the slow jams to be in my favorites, can I keep it in the hip hop and R&B thing, but then it's also in the favorites windows
at the top?
That's quite interesting.
It's quite good. There's some cool fixtures. It's none of it's really performance, it's more so workflow. So if you are used to using your tabs, so like the way you move your tabs and that's not working, probably I get that's annoying. But just things like color coding, like I'm really into color coding because I'm a visual learner.
Right. Okay.
And I work visually. Like, I've color coded like all my crates, so that tends to work for me. But it might work for others, might not. So
I like it. I like it for the aesthetics.
Mm.
I think it looks nice with the colours, but for me, that the coloured crates serve no purpose.
Yeah.
I only have two different types of coloured files in, you know, the little colour box that you can put the files. Red for brand new ones that I should be playing. So if I'm in like my main set and I'm skipping down and I'll see a little red dot go past. Oh, okay. Yeah. Figure that one out. And blue if it's a clean song.
Yeah.
And that's for like, you know, like the corporate jobs, the retail of course, jobs where it has. If it's blue, I know it's clean and I've listened through it and tested that it definitely is clean. And so it gets a blue mark.
Yeah.
They're the only ones I really, I use yellow for instrumentals, but I don't really use that as a visual cue.
Yeah.
It's just because I can, so why not?
And I see everyone works differently, didn't they? So that's why it's so good. But we have the option to do that. Like I said, we've got the rating system now as well. So you can rate songs. You can use emojis. Yeah. So you can put like a fire emoji instead of maybe using like a red dot, for example. So
I think that
gives you different options, doesn't it?
We brushed on that earlier. I think where the ratings thing would come in use, I thought about this since we mentioned earlier, is if, for example, if I was putting together a crate of, or if I asked someone to put together a crate of like Latin music, for example, and right, send me 50 Latin songs just in case I end up having nothing but Spanish people in the club. They could set their ratings and then their ID3 tags would convert into my library. So I can just look at the name of these songs and be like, okay, that one, that's got 5 flame emojis. That one must be a banger. That one's only got 2, so I'll just play that in the early time. Do you know what I mean? So
it's exactly like,
I think that's where, if you share your library, that's where it would be useful. But for me personally, I know my library inside out, so I know what slaps and what doesn't, as I'm sure a lot of people do. But I don't know, it feels like they overdeveloped.
Well, this is the thing though, we've given multiple examples of how we even use the colour coding differently. So each feature could be worked differently for somebody else. So I mean, I do agree it didn't necessarily need an update. I'm not too mad at the update and what it's given us. Like, I've added some things to my workflow, which is cool. Obviously they've taken things away that, you know, people did use that I necessarily didn't. So it depends on the user, I guess. But yeah, from a performance standpoint, I had no issues with it so far. It's been pretty spot on. So that's always good. Because I know typically when you update, there's always the odd bug where you might get a crash or a bit of a lag, but
find one of the worst ones for me is I find if I'm skimming through a crate and go through quite quickly, it will, most of my crates are lined up in like BPMs.
Yeah.
If I'm skimming through, it will suddenly jump back up to the top again. If I'm in like 92 BPM and I'm trying to get to 108 to find a song that I know is there, if I scroll too quickly, jumps, and now I'm back on 55. And I've got to go through the whole crate again, like just skim down. And it means like 1 or 2 seconds difference could mean like, oh, I missed the window for that song and now I've got to do something.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a bug.
Yeah. But speaking of software.
Yeah, go on.
Just small but still relevant pivot. Have any of you used UCB software yet?
Yes, Crate Match is amazing.
Crate Match is a godsend.
I've used that quite a lot for the weddings and corporates this year. It's helped me loads. I haven't used the duplicate remover. I've actually been pretty good at like removing duplicates in the past and stuff, but I want to try the updated user tags library tools where, yes, tags and queues, that
one. So I managed to get onto the early release thing. I sent him a message because, like I said, I'm in the process of going through a lot of shit. Like, you don't know how many Chris Brown songs and Drake songs I've deleted in the past 2 weeks.
Because you just never need them.
Because they're just unplayable, let alone never lead.
How many Puff Daddy songs did you keep, though?
I haven't got to P yet. I'm only on H. Like, Heady One is about to receive a mass delete.
getting cold.
Like, oh, my days. Getting D45.
You know, I said to you guys, I don't need, like, Crooked Eyes album cuts. Like, I really don't need them. So I've managed to save about 50 gig. So it's been actually quite worthwhile. But I'm using CB's MLT app to help reorganize. And the tags and queues is absolutely fantastic. Like, it's really good. So it able to put you in the years and, you know, helps you just organize and, you know, reset things pretty much. So give him a shout on this because, yeah, it's, It's fucking amazing.
Yeah, CB, he's doing good work with that good software.
Yeah, like very, very good.
Stuff he's coming up with.
And he's updating it on the fly as well. Like, I know sometimes these developers can take a bit of time to make updates, but he's really responsive to feedback. Like, yeah. I had a bit of a joke with him. One of the tags that come through on Mariah Carey songs is Christmas. So it doesn't change her tag to R&B or pop or whatever. It changes to Christmas or holiday. And I thought it was quite funny, but I just let him know. He was like, yeah, I might keep that. You know, it's just quite funny. So he's really responsive and he's changing things like very quickly and based on feedback from people that are using it. So just big respect to that.
And he's a DJ himself, which is what you want. Like, obviously the people behind Serato and a lot of these, like, you know, DBS is like, they are obviously got a DJ background, but yeah, for someone who's like kind of in a music library tool, like someone like him who one has got like a great coding background and is also like a wicked club DJ and knows like the workflow that we have, it's you know, he's going to be like up on that if there's like a bug in the software straight away. So
yeah, it's really 100%. Good, it's really good.
So I think it's when DJs identify problems with DJ world and then come up with the solutions, it's always like the best, man. Like CB, what he's doing is incredible.
But he has a solution for everything. Like, it's actually crazy when you actually deep it. Like, when you open the app, you have all, I think it's eight, if I'm not mistaken, eight different things. So you've got backup, you've got duplicates, you've got tags and queues, you've got crate match. And I just think to myself, it's fucking genius how he's done it.
Yeah.
So smart. You've got to give flowers where it's due. But like Cable said, that crate match is, for anyone that's doing a lot of corporate or wedding or private gigs, saves you hours and hours and hours.
I'll get him back on at some point to break down all of his software, like what he's been doing, what it all does and how helpful it is. Whenever I'll speak to him, I guess whenever he's going on the rollout for actually the proper, because it's in beta testing at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it's on like early release at the moment, but even still, like even early release, like the bugs that he's finding, they're not like drastic things, I think. Like there might be like the odd issue with like finding the right years, but I used it not long ago for my R&B and hip hop crate, and I was trying to break it down between 1990 and 2000, like that decade. And there was a few mistakes, but when I say a few, I probably had, say I had 1,000 songs in there.
Yeah.
Like, I probably would have had like 50 songs that were wrong.
Mad.
So it's very, very, very close to being perfect.
Yeah.
So I'd recommend basically every DJ get it, mate, because in terms of organ, you can never be, I guess, too organized. So if it helps even just like 5%, it's well worth it. Well worth it.
Yeah.
And I'll get one to break it down for sure.
Yeah. And do yourself a favor. Just buy the lifetime purchase. Like get it out of the way. Because one, you're not only supporting like great work, but two, just, you know, for the sake of £35 for a crate match, you're going to see that back in corporates and wedding gigs anyway. So it's
the £35 for crate match alone is worth it.
Yeah.
Like, well worth it. Couldn't be any more of a spokesperson for it. It's absolutely fantastic. And where he gets the data from, like, I think he gets it from DSPs, so it's really accurate. Like, you might get remastered versions, so like the year will be different, but if you're anal like me, you can just go and change it yourself to the original year that it was made. So yeah, it's even for new DJs, like, you're better off starting off organized than getting into a mess like I was in during lockdown, having to fucking basically strip back everything and start again. So you might as well start fresh with the use of this sort of software, because it's well worth it.
Good advice. Gents, I think let's do that there. It's a Talk Over pod. Cable, Just Craig and me, DJ Double, we're finally back after a mini 10
a year.
10 months. Yeah. It wasn't a year. 10-month hiatus, but we are back. Yeah, here we are. Talk Over Pod, at Talk Over Pod on Instagram and I think TikTok. I'll be honest, I can't even remember.
Everywhere.
Anyway, until the next one.
Peace. Ciao.
Peace.